You're listening to Bob Gross and Tom.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Final hour of Bob Gross and Tom. A reminder, we've got a big payoff coming up at the end of the show, so stay tuned for that. Your chance to win a $50 gift card for Sherry's Berries. But right now, it's time to bring in the birthday boy. Professor John Clayton with us on the Venue Kings Hotline. Hello, John.
Happy Hello, birthday. Guys. How are you?
Can you think of a better way to celebrate your birthday than talking to us?
Absolutely not. It's the highlight of, I think, the year.
Happy much. Birthday, man. Happy,
well, thank you. Appreciate that.
How's it been going so far?
Good. I mean, I think the best birthday present came from Pat because we had a physical therapist over this morning, and you know, she was able to try to get – they're working on the core, and so she was able to stand a little bit on the walker. She wasn't able to walk forward yet. She's still too weak for that, but that's the first time that she was able to be up there for maybe a couple minutes holding on to the walker, and that's progress.
Nice.
We get more of that. That's great to hear.
That's great news. That's great news. Well, good, good. Let's talk about what's going on in the world of the NFL. And I heard you talking the other day, John, and it was on the heels of a conversation we had about the potential of Brandon Marshall coming here. And we were all kind of going, nah, guy's older. He's not productive. You look at his numbers, and I understand there were injuries last year, but he seems like a very diminished version of himself. And then I heard you talking, and you seem very positive just in the idea, not that he was going to sign here, but you like the idea of him joining the Seahawks if they were so inclined.
Yeah, because what I liked, and I go back to a conversation that I had with him at the owners meeting in Phoenix last year, and you know, he goes to New York, and you know, his mind had adjusted because I said, how the heck, and again, he's from East Liberty, I'm from Braddock, PA, so we talk pretty much the same language. We grew up like 5 minutes apart or 5 miles apart, so again, we kind of know a little bit of each other. And so I said to him, it's like, how are you going to make the adjustment of being a number one receiver from all these years to being number two? And he says, oh, I welcome it. I said, you welcome it? Really? He says, yeah, here's what the deal is. He says, Odell Beckham is great. Now, I can come in there, and I'm not going to get the double coverage that I got for so many years and now just get single coverage. Now, if I do well, I'll be able to take a little bit of coverage away from Odell Beckham Jr. And so I said, pretty good thought, because I thought that would be one of the sleeper type of moves that would make their offense better. And then you go back, and I thought DeSean Jackson going down to Tampa Bay was going to take a little bit of pressure off of Mike Evans, and I thought that was going to be good. Well, in this case, you know, Marshall, Beckham Jr., they all got hurt. And so because of that, you know, they weren't able to get anything going in the passing game. And maybe the tank is empty. Maybe at 34, he could be done. But I still think that, you know, it's worth the chance to try to bring him in and see if you can talk him into it. But also, I know him well enough for a conversation I had with him with the Jets that, you know, the money has to be right or he's just going to pack it up and go into television. You know, he's got the show on Showtime right now. And so I think that probably what happened is that they talked to him. Probably had a good visit. And, you know, one of the great stories that he told me last year on Schooled with a Professor actually dealt with something that, you know, in Seattle. Because, and this is kind of a special moment for him because, you know, he has his foundation, which basically tries to take troubled kids, which he was one, and try to get them into a better mental state. So what happens is his wife does some of the teaching. And so she was out here in Seattle in May, and they were, you know, they had the class. And after the class was over, about a 15, 16-year-old girl walked over and he says, I want to thank you very much for what you said because I was going to kill myself today.
Wow.
And geez. So she, and then what they did, she opened up her purse and showed that she had all these pills that she was going to take to kill them. And so, you know, she gave all the pills away. And so literally that, and it was touching because he's here in Seattle. So I, you know, I'm sure that Brandon probably didn't bring this up, but there was a special place in Brandon's heart for Seattle based on what his wife told him of that experience.
So what do you, what's your gut tell you is going to happen?
He's not going to be signed. Not going to happen. I hear it's just it's pretty much a dead issue. I don't know if it's going to be the money. I don't know if they thought maybe he was at the end. But as from everything that I hear, it's not going to be a match.
Do you think that the production of Jimmy Graham and Paul Richardson needs to be replaced specifically at wide receiver?
I think they need one upgrade. It's kind of like the offensive line. I mean, you can take the tack that maybe there's not enough wide receivers. I mean, if so many people took the tack on the offensive line, you know, bring in five new linemen, which, of course, obviously was not going to happen. And what they did was just kind of pinpoint one guy, you know, getting DJ Fluker to come in with Mike Solari and hope that Mike Solari is going to make the current group better and then get good run blocking out of DJ Fluker. When Bob Condotta did his cut down to 53, which kind of, you know, jives with what I was thinking too, and then you realize he had David Moore as the fifth wide receiver. You look at it and you say, okay, David Moore, Tanner McElvoy. You start to look and say, you know, they could probably use one more. And so that's where I think that you know, they'll continue to look and see if they can get somebody to come in. And I think that what they would like is a big receiver. I mean, that's something that's always been there. Not always, but that's been a staple of what Pete Carroll has always believed in, whether it was Mike Williams or whatever, to have a big, tall, wide receiver. That's where Marshall would have been a fit. So I still think they're going to continue to look to see if there is that type of receiver out there.
We were playing some cuts from Joel Klatt earlier. He was on with Brock and Salk, I believe, in the morning, right? Not with you, John, on the mm-hmm. John Clayton show. It was the Brock and Salk show.
Yeah.
He was talking about teams with a quarterback in the top five in terms of their percentage, quarterback contract percentage of the salary cap they were eating up. And typically, he wasn't saying it's an absolute, but typically they don't win Super Bowls. What do you think of that theory?
I don't buy it. And again, the reason I don't buy it is because, you know, you look at the AFC. Okay, if you're going to eliminate 12 teams, period, whether they pay the quarterbacks or don't pay the quarterbacks, because everything in the AFC for Super Bowls has been, you know, for victories have been four quarterbacks. So you eliminate every other quarterback in the AFC, because if it wasn't Tom Brady, Peyton Manning twice, you know, in two different cities, Ben Roethlisberger and Joe Flacco, you didn't win a Super Bowl, whether you paid the quarterback or didn't pay the quarterback. And then you look at the ever-twisting NFC, which, of course, is loaded with great quarterbacks, and, you know, it's like they still kind of cannibalize each other once they get into the playoffs, and so you don't have it there. But again, when you see all the success, and so the way the contracts work is that, yeah, you could be Aaron Rodgers and you're the highest paid guy at $22 million. Next thing you know, cap keeps going up. Your contract's 5-6 years. You're now sixth, seventh, or eighth as far as the quarterback salaries. And so it's like, oh, so you know, does that count? Because what Joel's taking into account, if you're the top five cap guy, what I look at, and this goes to a lot of cap guys that I've talked to, you can take 15% of your cap and still be successful building a team. Now, you have to be smart about it. You realize at different points you have to let some guys go. But if you don't have the quarterback, you're not going to win. And so if you have the quarterback, you have to pay the quarterback. And so you can go 15% of your cap. You can go as high as 18% of your cap. But you still have to make sure that you do all the right things around it. So I don't buy that theory because, again, you know, there's so few quarterbacks, particularly from the AFC, that have won Super Bowls. And they didn't necessarily have the highest cap number because their contracts may have been passed by others.
Well, Russell Wilson will be a top five cap guy the next time, right?
Uh-huh. No question. Yeah, because, you know, he can take the tack. Where, you know, the argument's going to be once Aaron Rodgers gets done, do you have to take a little bit less than Aaron to get a deal done with Seattle like they did the last time? Because remember, Rodgers made 22 and Wilson made 21.9. We talked to Joel Corey this week, you know, the agent, former agent who's at CBSSports.com and does a great job there. He thinks ultimately they're going to have to go a little bit higher than Aaron Rodgers to get a deal done, but so much of it depends on Aaron Rodgers because he'll set the ceiling at 31.75 or whatever it's going to be. Then you see where the tactics go for, you know, Mark Rodgers, his agent, to see if he can top it or come under it. But he'll make 31 plus.
Yeah, what leverage do the Seahawks have in this at all?
They can franchise him for 2 years, which, of course, you can say, okay, that's franchise tags at 30 and 36 million. And you say, wow, that's not bad. You can survive on that. But when you look at the big picture, when you do the franchise tag and don't do the signing bonus, you tend to lose a little bit of money. I give you, for example, Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell is doing great at 14.55 million. But if you would have taken the last 12 plus million dollar offer from the Steelers, he would have made more money over the first couple of years of that that contract. And then, but that wasn't the case. And so a lot of times you can do the franchise and it's satisfactory. It worked well for Kirk Cousins because they were offering so much less than what he made as a franchise tag guy. But you tend to lose a little bit of cash flow that you can make. But hey, when you're talking 36 million bucks, who cares? It's still big money, but I still think they can get a deal done.
Hey, John, just looking at this team as it's assembled right now, and maybe they'll add more pieces before it's all said and done, and it'll look a little bit different. But ultimately, is this a team that you look at and say, yeah, down year, 8-8, 7-9? I see so many of those predictions out there, and I just think there's – when you've got your franchise quarterback, when you've got your head coach in place, you've got maybe the best linebacker tandem in the league, you still have Earl Thomas, you still have Doug Baldwin. To me, there's way too much talent on this team to go, yeah – 7-9, 8-8 at best. I don't quite understand those predictions nationally.
Yeah, I don't either, because here's where the difference is, and I still compare this to 2011 when they went 7-9 and won the division and won the game against the Saints. You know, what I look at is that they've got a quarterback, and a quarterback's got to be good for X number of wins. And so if they could go 7-9 with an offseason and had Charlie Whitehurst as your starting quarterback and then went to DeVaris Jackson, who couldn't really get comeback victories, now you've got Russell Wilson there. You still have three Pro Bowlers on defense. You still have, good young players that are there like Frank Clark and, Shaquille Griffin. You still have Pro Bowler and Doug Baldwin, and you still think there's going to be a better offensive line and a commitment to the running game. So you put all that together, I still look at them as being a 9-10 win team. I look at them kind of like the Mariners. If they're going to make it, they're going to make it more as a wild card than a division winner. But I still think that they can be a 9-10 win team.
John, what did you hear about the highs and lows of the little rookie get-together they had?
Well, there was more highs than lows because, again, the lows were on draft days, those 3 days where everybody was looking and say, who the heck are these guys? You know, why would they take them? And then you look at them on the field and you see the fits. I mean, you see that Michael Dixon looked outrageously good. I mean, where the billing was, he's the best punter in years to come from the draft. Well, it looks that way. Then you look at the seventh round pick, Alex Magoo, who I thought was going to be practice squad all over. But now you look and say, hey, I think he can make it as the backup. Rashard Penny looked great. He really ran well. We didn't see a lot out of Raheem Green, but Jacob Martin looked good. Will Disley looks like he could be a good football player, particularly as a blocking tight end. And the one that looked the part was at the cornerback position, because that looked good. So Trey Flowers was able to look like a 6'3" version of Richard Sherman, and that looked encouraging. So I think the fits made it more positive, where you look on the outside and you say, well, on most teams you're not going to have the same grades. Well, on this team, the grades were higher because they are scheme fits.
Do you think Ben Roethlisberger has a right to be upset that they drafted a quarterback in the third round and didn't use that pick on something to help him?
No, I don't think so. I think that he's kind of whining a little bit and being a little bit of a baby on it because of...
No way.
What's that?
He would never do that, John.
No, drama man and drama queen. I can't imagine him doing that. It's like... and, of course, I saw that he texted him today to welcome him to the Steelers. But is this any different than... you're just trying to protect yourself in case the end is near. And so is it any different than Ryan Mallett and Jimmy Garoppolo going as high picks to the New England Patriots? No, it's no different. And it's not like Mason Rudolph is threatening the job of Ben Roethlisberger, but at least it gave an opportunity with a reasonably low pick, a third rounder, to get somebody who might be there. And hey, if Ben decides that he can play four more years and play at the same level, well, then you let Mason Rudolph go, or you trade Mason Rudolph and you try to get some value of it. So I think that Ben shouldn't have to worry about it, but he did.
Well, this whole thing is his fault because he's led them to believe that he's going to be retiring for the last couple of years, right? So he got himself into it. But at the same time, with them knowing that he's going to be playing, it is kind of a waste of a pick. He's not going to take that job.
No. But again, what happens if Ben does get a career-ending injury? I mean, he is older. Something like that can happen. Now you have somebody that you can fall back on and somebody at least you can develop for 4 years, because at least you have 4 years with this guy. And then, if you need to, you have to put the franchise tag to get him the fifth year. But, I think it's a nice protective thing. We're in the third round. Okay, where's the spot that you're going to get somebody to be able to come in and make an immediate impact? In fact, I know that the stories coming out of Pittsburgh today on their rookie minicamp, they anticipate that not one of the draft choices will be in the starting lineup this year. And so whether it was a first-round pick or a second-round pick, the team's talented enough, there wasn't many starting opportunities. And so in the third round, are they really going to get a difference maker? No, but they get themselves an insurance policy in case something goes wrong with Ben, and maybe somebody to develop to be the next Ben.
The professor John Clayton joins us as he does every Friday at 2 o'clock. And a story that's similar to the Big Ben story is Joe Flacco. I'd read, and maybe it's changed, maybe he has communicated with Lamar Jackson, but I saw that he was asked about it. He said, I don't have anything to say, or no comment, or something along those lines. Do you think he's feeling threatened out there? Is he in a bit of trouble? What do you think is going on?
He should feel threatened because he is being threatened. You know, the fact that his cap number is going to be bigger next year, and I think that they're taking the tack that it's like, okay, it hasn't worked the last couple of years. We're going to go and try to get the next quarterback. And so I think that he should realize there's a threat, and I can imagine that the relationship will not be good. You know, Joe has to be professional about it, but basically they drafted Lamar Jackson. This is different than the Mason Rudolph, because, you know, Mason Rudolph just kind of hanging around there in the third round. Pittsburgh trades up and they get Rudolph, who is considered at least a second round pick, so they get value. In this case, you know, they move up with Lamar Jackson with the intent, if he can pick up the offense in 2019, he might be the quarterback.
How much longer is the NFL going to have kickoffs?
One more year. This might be it. Although, one of the things that I think is optimistic is that the way that they're going to vote on it in 2 weeks at the owners' meeting in Atlanta is that, you know, they're going to have the running start eliminated. So that means that, you know, you get there at the 35 and you only have three guys deep. Okay, so those three guys, at least according to Brian Snyder, at least in his eyes, might just be returners, one of them being Penny, one of them being Tyler Lockett, and they're going to have a little bit more room to run. And so that actually may open up more exciting plays and more exciting runs. Hopefully that could save it, but I think right now they're looking at the concussions. They say five times the number of concussions on kickoff and kickoff returns happen compared to any other play, and they're looking to eliminate it. So I think this could be the last year, and I think that'd be a shame.
What's the union stance on that, because that's affecting guys who are return specialists?
Surprisingly, they've not really taken any kind of an outspoken read on it yet, and that's which I'm surprised at, because you're right. I mean, it minimizes some of the value of the kickoff kickers. That minimizes that. Certainly, it takes guys who are great returners. I mean, you know, would a Devin Hester be as valuable if it wasn't for the returns? No. Would he even be in the league? I mean, you've got guys like Steve Smith and Devin Hester who started out on the return teams for a year or two, and all of a sudden, you know, they don't get the chance to do the returns. Yeah, they might do the punts, but they're not going to have the kickoff returns. It eliminates the chances for some of the good young defensive players or good young players to get on the field on special teams, because now they can't run down on the kickoffs and try to make tackles because there's no kickoffs. Yeah, I think it's a bigger impact that the Players Association is not letting on to.
I think it's lame. I think it's totally lame. So what does that mean? You obviously could never have the threat of an onside kick.
Pretty much. Yeah. Well, then, if you do have, I think what they're talking about is they're almost going to like make it a play where you have to gain like 10 or 15 yards, like almost make it like a fourth down type of play. That would be your onside kick, which of course can get players injured.
What do you mean you're just going to run another play from scrimmage and it's got to gain 10, I don't understand.
Yeah,
how
it's
that
like what you would do is
you take
the ball at your 35-yard line, and then it's now it's fourth and 10. You have to come up with a play to be able to keep the ball, and if you don't, then you just like losing the onside kick.
You'll still okay. All right.
Let's put it this way: if you want me to give you a good explanation of what they can do to replace the onside kick, there is none.
Exactly.
I can come up and say, oh yeah, well this is a good replacement. No, it isn't. It's a bad idea.
How do they start the game then? Do you just get the ball on the 25?
No, you do what they did in the XFL with the scrum.
Yeah, I mean seriously, how does
the ball on the 25?
You just start on the 25.
Yeah, and then you of course have to change your vocabulary because you can't say kickoff is at 105. Well, guess what? There's no kickoff.
What's going to happen in the Matt Patricia story? Anything?
Probably not. I mean, you're talking about a case that's 22 years old, and the NFL is going to investigate. I think that, you know, what they really need to do in Detroit is to, you know, maybe check them out a little bit, because the Lions said that, oh, we didn't find anything. And I saw somebody on the internet literally was within 5 seconds able to dig up the police report. and see that there was a police report. But I think in the end,
because... Don't you think the Lions asked Matt Patricia, is there anything in your past? Have you ever, I mean, are you telling me that they didn't ask the question?
Maybe they didn't. Because remember, I mean, this is one of those Super Bowl hirings. And because it's he's preparing for the game, he's preparing for the chance to go and win another Super Bowl ring, and so literally, you know, they hire him pretty much. I mean, you could say that they waited till after the Super Bowl, but you know, they made an agreement beforehand illegally, and so they didn't have a chance to really talk to him much. I mean, unless in the initial interview, right during their bye week.
I mean, that might be like question number five on my list, John.
Yeah. Be a good one,
right? But... I mean, even if you got limited time to ask questions, isn't it an automatic one? A, have you committed any crimes in the past that may come out?
Mm-hmm. It would be a good question to ask.
Yeah,
but I guess the tact would be, Matt could have said, well, no, not really. I mean, sure, well, there's an arrest, but you know, she didn't testify, and so the charges were dropped, and so you know, he said, well, I'm innocent, but
I understand that, but he was arrested.
Yeah, he was arrested. Yeah,
and I'm not blaming him for this, and you know, we'll see how it plays out. But I'm talking about the Lions. Mm-hmm. I mean, this seems like an incredible lack of due diligence.
Well, that's, and I agree. That's why I think that when they investigate it, you know, they need to get to the bottom of what the Lions did or did not do, because they really should have done something, because something did happen, whether it was right, wrong, or indifferent. But there was a formal charge, and they didn't even know about it.
John, you doing your show this weekend?
Yes, indeed. 9 to 12.
Talk to you at 10.
Thank you.
See you, John. There he is.
Happy birthday, buddy.
Thank you.
The Professor John Clayton with us every Friday at 2 o'clock. Meanwhile, are the Mariners on the national radar at all? We're going to ask former Seinfeld star, and I think he played baseball, Keith Hernandez. He's going to join us next with Bob Gross and Tom. It is Bob Gross and Tom. We'll be catching up with Keith Hernandez here in just a couple of moments. A reminder, we've got the big payoff coming your way, your chance to win a $50 gift card for Sherry's Berries just in time for Mother's Day. And if you don't win during our show today, we're giving you another chance to win at 710sports.com/win. You can place your order today at berries.com. So hopefully they're getting that done, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're seriously running out of time.
Down to a precious few moments. So, yeah, hopefully that's happening, and we'll do that coming up at the end of the show. But it is a pleasure to speak to a guy we've been talking about throughout the show. You know him as a baseball player, a broadcaster, but we most affectionately know him as a character on our favorite show, Seinfeld. He's with us on the Venue Kings Hotline talking about Keith Hernandez. Keith, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Hey, we appreciate you taking a few minutes with us, and we were debating during the show earlier today. You're a guy that you've got a lot of accolades under your belt, right? Gold gloves and a brilliant player. You're a broadcaster, but you know, we love Seinfeld like no other show, and we're wondering, when people approach you, what do they bring up most often? Is it your baseball career? Is it something you said on a broadcast, or is it your appearance on an iconic show like Seinfeld?
Well, believe it or not, there's a lot of people that, well, not don't believe it or not, it's a fact. It's a lot of people that never saw me play baseball. And, baseball only touches a certain segment of society. And Seinfeld touched the entire nation and also on an international level. So I always have people come up to me in an airport and will say, can I help you move, or nice game, pretty boy, you name it.
That's awesome.
Well, nowadays, aren't people coming up to you and asking you how Haji's doing?
Yes, and that has been the new mantra now, is that they love my cat, Hodge, and my 15-year-old cat who's become a superstar.
How did this whole thing happen? Because it's imagine you're as perplexed as anyone that this would have been the sort of thing that would make you a social media star.
I'm of an older generation. My kids were on it, and now that's ironically they're no longer on it, and their dad is. So it's kind of a working across purposes there. It's kind of funny. I was just kind of doing it just to promote the book, and I have an apparel line that's out, and it all came out at once, so I thought it was okay. And then when Rusty Staub died, my former teammate, just on, right before the season started, I wanted to write something because I knew I had a Twitter handle that was just in neglect for years. And when I wrote that little eulogy for Rusty, all of a sudden people kind of just screamed back and started talking back at me. And then I was promoting the book, and then when I took my cat out to get the morning paper, which I do every morning, I didn't know you can do video on Twitter. Someone told me, hey, you know, you can do video. So we flew home from San Diego at the end of a road trip. I did the games in San Diego with the Mets, all the way cross country. I didn't get home till like 4:30 in the morning. Got in bed, woke up around 11, got up to get the paper, put Haji on my shoulder, and I decided, I'll just do a video. What the heck? So it's a 30-yard walk out there, long driveway, and that went viral instantly. And that, all of a sudden, then I had a following within 24 hours of like 15,000 more people. And then when 72 hours, I had over 35,000 people.
Wow.
Now I have over 72. And, you know, I've always liked to write, and I do it in the morning. I get up, have a cup of coffee, do my little tweet, give them a video of Hodge, and it's just been amazing. It's been absolutely
incredible.
What an experience.
Did you say he's 15? Did you say he's 15 years old?
Mm-hmm.
Man,
15 years old, going on 4. He's in great shape. I've always had, you know, I get him to the vet, gets all of his stuff done that he needs, and he's in great health. And the vet said to me, he's at least going to live past 20 if he doesn't get any ailments. And it's my job to keep him alive as long as possible because he's my buddy.
Yeah, I was going to say, looking at him, he does not look like an old cat at all. So, yeah, you're right. Whatever you're doing is working out well.
No, he's all over the place. He runs all over the place. I live out here. I have a big backyard, and all the squirrels and birds, they drive him crazy. He's all over the place.
Hey, Keith, you just mentioned social media a second ago. It got me thinking. How do you think the 86 Mets would have dealt with both social media and just the general media climate nowadays?
Well, that's an unknown question. I'd be speculating. I think some would love it and some wouldn't. But, you know, it's going to put us in a generation. I mean, I'm kind of the old school. I don't think that I would have been on social media when I played. It would have been too much of a distraction. I don't even know if these guys that are on social media, the players today, if they got people writing for them. You know, I can't imagine that they're putting stuff out there on a daily basis, other than a blurb here and a blurb there, if they're doing it. I remember Josh Tolley, one of our catchers from 5 years ago. He had a Twitter handle, and he had a slump, a season where he couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat. And he had to get off Twitter because they were just killing him on Twitter. So, you know, you don't need that. So I really don't know. I have a hunch that maybe Daryl would have liked it. Lenny probably would have liked it. But I'm speculating.
Keith Hernandez is our guest here with Bob Gross and Tom. He's got a new book out called I'm Keith Hernandez. We'll get into that in just a moment. But, Keith, as far as the game goes today, I'm curious, who is there a player or a few players that you just really enjoy watching, whether it's, I don't know, Bryce Harper or Mike Trout or maybe Shohei Ohtani perhaps? What are your thoughts on today's players that really grab your attention?
Well, I think that Trout is the premier player and an all-around player. I mean, if you're plays defense, knows how to run the bases, got all the tools, he's certainly the premier player. Ohtani, I've seen on TV a few times, and boy, I like the way he swings the bat. He looks like a major leaguer to me, but that's the American League. I don't see that much of it. You know, they're making an evaluation. You have to really see the players. I've always liked Stanton. He's very dangerous. In our day, he would have been a cleanup hitter. You know, he would have hit in the fourth spot. I like Aaron Judge. I like the way he swings the bat. Those two I like a lot, and that's the American League. I mean, there's a lot of good players in the American League, but I grew up in a National League town in San Francisco. There was no Oakland A's until I was in high school, so we were a National League town, and so I favor, and I played in the National League. Atlanta's got some nice players down there. They got some good young players that hustle and know how to play the game. Enciarte, I like, of course, Freddie Freeman. There's some good players down there. I like that Swanson. Arizona has some good players. So they're around.
How do you feel about the way the game is played today? I'm looking at your numbers. I think one time in your career, maybe you struck out 100 times. This year, we'll probably have two dozen guys that will strike out 200 times. I mean, the game really has changed a lot, it feels like.
Yeah. And there's no action. It's boring.
Yeah.
It's all the love affair with the home run, and they don't care about strikeouts. The management, it's not just the players. The players are being taught this. We don't care if you strike out. Shoot. I mean, I struck out 100 times. I believe it was in 88, and it was towards the end of my career. And I tried to hit 20 home runs that year, and I wound up hitting 18. And I drove in less than 90 runs. And I remember I went into the off season going, well, okay, heck with that, because I didn't have as good a year as I'd had in the past years, even though I hit more. I used to hit about 15 home runs. And so I was going to go back the next year in 89, just go back to my old self. But that was the year I got hurt. I broke my kneecap in a collision in a game, and I was out most of the season, and I never really bounced back from that injury. That was kind of put a damper on my career.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us, just because you're so close to the Mets, obviously, what the heck happened with Matt Harvey there? Was this a problem that had just been festering for a long, long time, or what happened with him there?
Well, he had two pretty major surgeries, and that affected his performance. The thoracic outlet surgery is very different surgery altogether, very serious. There's not a lot of guys that have, there's not a lot of pathology. It's kind of a new injury. I don't know why, but it is. And they're not sure how, you know, if he'll ever come back. I know he's not throwing hard enough anymore, and he's lost a little bit of the bite on his slider. He has to learn to pitch. On the other side, on the other hand, you know, he basically, you know, put the cart before the horse. You know, he had some moments. It was he was dazzling, but you know what? The true sign of greatness is doing it over the years, not just 1 year, 2 years. You got to do it 3, 4 before you can call someone great. You know, you can count on Trout. He's got a body of work. You know, that he's done it enough. You know what you're going to get from him. And there's too much today with PR. Oh, this player has a good year. He's done the best thing since sliced cheese. And you know, then they fall back to earth. So he, I think he became a distraction in the clubhouse. He was having an awful time with it. He was getting killed. No one wants to do poorly, and he got put in the bullpen. He wasn't happy. So I think it's a good thing for him and a good thing for the Mets that they parted ways.
Hey, Keith, before we let you go, you've got a new book out, as we mentioned, titled I'm Keith Hernandez. For the listeners out there, it comes out May 15th. Give us a little insight as to what the book's about.
The book is about my formative years. Everybody knows, I think, when I was with the Mets, was the finished product. But there was a lot that went into getting me to that point, which was my boyhood dream, was to be a major leaguer, and not only a major leaguer, but a major league star. So it's, you know, it's about my youth coming up. My father, who was an ex-minor league player, that taught us, my brother and I, how to play on through minor leagues, where I struggled in A-ball and double-A, and then all of a sudden I get to triple-A, and I kill it. And I get to the big leagues, and it took me 3 years to get untracked in the big leagues. So it's about that struggle, and all about an honest portrayal of, you know, when I didn't know if I was going to make it, you know. And it ends appropriately in 1980 after my MVP year and batting title year in 79. I'd always had bad Aprils. I had a great April in 1980, and I'd never put two seasons back-to-back together, and good seasons. And I knew at the end of May 1st, 1980, that I belonged on the same field with Pete Rose, Willie Stargell, Tom Seaver, Steve Carlton, Steve Garvey, to name a few, and that I not only belonged on that field, that I could play right with them. And so that's where the book ends. So everybody thinks the I'm Keith Hernandez is a Seinfeld reference, and it certainly is, because it gets the eye, and everybody remembers that line. But it's also, I'm Keith Hernandez, I'm a major league player, I made it, I belong here.
There you go. It's coming out May 15th, available wherever books are sold. I'm Keith Hernandez is the title, and we've been speaking with the author, Keith Hernandez. Keith, a real pleasure to speak with you again. We've admired your work and everything you've done up to this point and wish you the best with this book, and maybe we get a chance to talk to you again down the road.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
There he is, Keith Hernandez, who obviously is embracing the Seinfeld aspect of his life.
Yeah, I mean, he's in New York. He's pretty much identified with that. Why not Seinfeld as well?
Why not?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you?
Yeah, but you know how some people want to be known for, listen, I played baseball this whole time. Yeah. I didn't. It's not about this episode that I did. But
like Bob Denver used to always say, I'm more than just Gilligan.
Is that what he said?
Yes, he did. He was very upset that he was always referred to as Gilligan.
Well, look at Tommy.
What else did he do?
Well, that's
exactly.
He was Dobie Gillis.
Oh yeah. Well, look at Tommy. Look at Tommy John. What's he known for?
Surgery.
Right, and he won like 280 games. I mean, that's just a break sometimes.
Sometimes,
but people
it is.
Still talk about him every time somebody gets hurt.
Yep. Yeah.
But I'll say this: I'm looking at his Twitter page right now, which is at Keith Hernandez, and the latest tweet he has is 2 hours ago, and it's a picture of him and Jerry Seinfeld.
Okay.
He's got Seinfeld in a Mets jersey and hat, and he's got his arm around him, and the story's from USA Today. It says Keith Hernandez remembers the Seinfeld nerves, the laughs, and all that. So there you go.
They're pretty friendly.
I thought you'd like the Haji tweets.
His cat does not look 15 years old.
Not at all.
That's good for him.
How long do cats live anyway? 20 years? 19?
That's the
getting
outlier. Yeah.
All
yeah. Right. So good to talk to him. Hey, time for the big payoff. Your chance to win a $50 gift card for Sherry's Berries just in time for Mother's Day. And again, if you don't win here, you're going to get another chance to win. Go to 710sports.com/win. You can place your order today at berries.com. Today's big payoff question is,
what does Blake Bortles not do that the rest of us normally do?
The rest of America?
Yeah.
If you know the answer to that, 421-3776, toll-free 866-979-3776. We'll come back with our winner, and we'll sum it all up next with Bob Gross and Tom.
Hey, this is Danny O'Neill from the Danny, Dave, and Moore Show. Thank you for listening to the Bob Gross and Tom Show. I'd really appreciate it if you checked out Danny, Dave, and Moore every afternoon from 3 to 7. You can stream us live at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app, or listen on demand.
It's time to sum it up with Bob Gross and Tom. The final word every day on the show of record at 2:45.
All right, we asked you a big payoff question. Again, on the line, a $50 gift card for Sherry's Berries. And a reminder, if you don't win here, you can go to 710sports.com/win for another opportunity to win, or you can just order them at berries.com. But today's big payoff question was,
what does Blake Bortles not do that the rest of us normally do? And that would be?
You could answer this in several ways, right?
You could, but the basic car. One is that he doesn't lock his car.
Leave the keys in it.
Leave his wallet in it.
Take his keys and wallet. Come on, man.
Puts up a big sign that says, have at it. Whatever. today's winner is?
Brandon in Seattle.
Brandon in Seattle. Congrats, yes. And hopefully you use your gift card wisely. Make somebody happy.
Yeah, your mom.
Yeah,
it could be his wife.
Sure.
Maybe they have children. You never know. A sister. You know, it doesn't have to be a...
Anybody.
Yeah, use it wisely. That's all.
I got tweeted by somebody called RotoWare Classic, and they came up with this...
RotoWare Classic?
Yeah.
I don't know.
They came up with this shirt. It says No, and it has the Canadian...
Maple leaf.
In the middle of each O, and James Paxton retweeted it, right?
Right.
Somehow I got on this thread, and everybody's liking it, and it just got me wondering, who is the most popular Mariner right now?
Where?
Not in Canada.
here in this city?
Just,
or
just amongst Mariner fans. Because forever it was Felix or Ichiro and Felix.
Could be Dee Gordon.
I'd say it's still Felix.
You think so?
I mean, he does have his own section out there. I'll give you that.
Could be the new guy.
Dee Gordon's only been here for 6 weeks.
Yeah, but he's incredibly popular.
I'm not going to say he's the most popular Mariner after 6 weeks.
Kyle Seager is a star of their commercials.
Right. But, I mean, it could be Paxton because he might be their best player.
Paxton might be at the moment.
Yeah. That's what I'm asking, though, right now.
Well, I think Felix is still the guy.
Still got it?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Felix is still the guy who's still... still.
That's a good question, though.
Yeah.
Could be. I mean, Cano and Cruz have been here and done some good things, so they could be one of those guys. Seager's been here.
Yeah, the thing is, none of those guys jump out as being head and shoulders above. It's kind of a... It's a good metaphor for what they actually are as a team. The lineup really works together. I mean, Haniger's been hitting this way only for a little while, but he's a great player so far. Mm-hmm. Gordon, the same thing. But so maybe it is still Felix. But as far as, like we talked about yesterday, the impact on the team, who's going to be the one to carry them to greatness? It's going to be Paxton. So if he keeps pitching this way, I think it could be him pretty soon.
Could be. Could very well be. I mean, it's...
Although the most popular player isn't automatically the best player.
That's right. True also.
Which is why it could be Erasmo Ramirez.
Well, sometimes
if he had a better armpit.
That damaged armpit's really setting him back with the fan base.
I mean, Keith Hernandez was probably a very popular player on the Mets, but he wasn't necessarily their best player either. Strawberry or Gooden or
one
of those guys.
I think the most popular guy with the Mets there was at that time was Mookie Wilson, mainly because of his name.
Mookie. I mean, all those, again, that's a lineup full of stars.
Sure, but, and that was a World Series championship
right,
team.
But here, I don't know, Paxton could get there. Could.
Sure he could.
He's got, I mean, he's got his own section in the stands, too.
Yes, he does.
Hey.
It's a very clever, creative section.
That's right. That's
with
right.
The Maple Leaf.
Is Danny David Moore coming on?
I believe there is going to be a
pregame show. We're going to go till maybe it gets called, maybe it doesn't.
Oh,
Danny
so
David Moore, Danny David Moore waiting in the bullpen.
So we're turning it over to the Mariners pregame show.
Yes,
but
we are.
It could be Danny David Moore after that. So, all right, there you go. Our thanks to John Clayton and Keith Hernandez for joining us on the program. If you missed anything, go to 710sports.com. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday with Bob Gross and Tom.
I'm sorry to say this, but they don't know what they're talking about. Okay, sorry. They don't know what they're talking about.